You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to On Texas Football Sunday Night Live Stream. I'm Bobby Burton. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. I'm the only one wearing green here. But hey, we're going to talk a little Longhorn football, a little Longhorn basketball. The Longhorns, a 7 seed baseball team, almost took it on the chin, almost got swept this week by the University of Washington. And then a couple of good news things. Lance Jackson, a recruit out of Texarkana, Pleasant Grove, Jerry and Rod. It sounds like he might end up being a 5-star after what he did today at the Under Armour Combine down in Houston. Finally, we'll talk a little bit more about some other guys that Jerry talked to at the event. And then also Scotty Scheffler. Congratulations to him. He wins the Players Championship.
Great day.
8-under today. He came screaming back. It was like Rod Babers running in the 40.
Yeah.
let's start with the Longhorn basketball team. I'm going to check to you, Jerry. A 7 seed, kind of high based on what we thought, huh?
Well, you know, because the metric said 7 seed. We've been talking about it on TexasFootball.com. Then the Texas's NCAA net ranking was always inside 30 after they won at Texas Tech and they had that strong close to the regular season. They were sitting inside 30, fluctuating between 25 and 29, 30. So they were right there on that 7 seed line. And we kind of been talking about that. After the loss to Kansas State, I wasn't sure they'd get the nod necessarily. But if you look at it, they had 5 quad one wins, right? They had 4 Big 12 road wins. So they kind of had that metric to be a 7 seed team. Do I think they're a 7 seed team? I don't really know. I mean, look, you can throw these guys up in this tournament this year. It's going to be a wild tournament. I think there's going to be upsets everywhere in this tournament. One thing is Texas a 7 seed as an offensive basketball team? They dang sure are. If Max Asemus and Dylan Dessou play well, they can win a game and challenge Tennessee in the second round of the tournament. I'm not sure Tennessee's a great matchup for Texas if they get there. And by the way, I'm not sure if either coach will call a timeout in that game if they both get there. Virginia, Colorado State's interesting because you'd probably rather play Colorado State from a tempo standpoint. You get in a game against Virginia, and if they get you in that slowest tempo in college basketball and you're not making threes, you will lose that game. That's the key. If they can get you in that slow tempo and they're in that game and you start missing threes, if you have an off night from the field, you will lose in Charlotte to Virginia. I think Colorado State's probably the better matchup for Texas. But they're in the tournament as a 7 seed. They're playing a 10 seed. That Virginia-Colorado State game will be played Tuesday night in Dayton. That'll be on True TV. Those teams will board a flight, head to Charlotte, day of prep, play Texas on Thursday. Probably be a late game, obviously, coming off having to play the Tuesday game. But I think Texas has a more favorable matchup against Colorado State than Virginia. I think they'll obviously be favored in either one of those games. Neither one of them's a gimme. Colorado State and Texas have only played one common opponent this year. That was Wyoming. Colorado State split with Wyoming in conference play. Texas beat Wyoming 86-63 early in the season without Dylan Dessou in Austin. Obviously, Wyoming's a little different team later in the year.
Yeah, I want to ask you some more questions. Before I do that, I want to, and about the tournament as a whole, before I do that, I want to say thank you to our newest sponsor. Our newest sponsor is Joe Brown. Special thanks to him. He's your veteran mortgage professional. Joe has been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than three decades. In fact, he was my mortgage broker for my very first ever home purchase more than 25 years ago. Joe's also a proud Navy veteran, a devout Longhorn fan, has 2 degrees, by the way, from the University of Texas. Give him a call, 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, he has experience. No one else can, or very few can match with that amount of time in the business. That's 512-663-4744. He's also worked with various University of Texas athletes over the years as well. Thank you, Joe, for your sponsorship. Rod, what were your immediate takeaways from the from what you saw of the announcement today with the NCAA tourney?
Yeah, it was a little higher than I thought they'd get. Honestly, I thought the projections I thought had them around an 8 or 9 seed, somewhere around there. I mean, probably more like a 9 seed, but it's good for the Longhorns with the 7 seed. I mean, it probably shows you more respect for the Big 12 schedule and how it lays. I mean, the Big 12 is the toughest conference, basketball conference in the country, and it's not even close. So the hope is that this is a battle-tested Texas basketball team. I think it's up. I mean, if Tyrese Hunter and Max A. Smith play well, Dylan Dessou is a constant. I mean, he's out there. He's going to play well, and you know what he's going to give you. I mean, he's pretty much the identity of the team. If Max A. Smith and Tyrese Hunter play well, if you get good guard play, to me, that's the key for Texas winning a game and potentially even making a run. If they get good guard play, consistent guard play, they haven't really had that all season long, both Max A. Smith and Tyrese Hunter playing well, in addition to Dylan Dessou. So to me, that's kind of the key for them, and a fast start. And I don't like them getting behind either. I don't like this is a team that has to play from behind. I don't like that. When they have a fast start too, I say that, and then they just gave up a big lead and lost the game. So, I think ultimately it comes down to guard play, like it always does in a tournament. If Tyrese Hunter and Max A. Smith play well, we know what we're gonna get from Dylan Dessou. Dylan Dessou is, like I said, he's basically the identity of the team at times. But what they need is a supporting cast, pretty much, for Dylan Dessou, and we haven't had a consistent supporting cast for Texas.
I'm gonna follow up on that real quick, Bobby. That it's all about Tyrese Hunter to me. Look, I mean, teams are going to get the ball out of Max's hands. He's had a really good season, but when the team gets the ball out of his hands, mm-hmm. Tyrese Hunter has to play well. Tyrese Hunter goes from a career-high 30 against OU to 0 field goals made against Kansas State. And I hate to keep crushing Tyrese Hunter, but this is why it's so important right now for Texas. And there are 3 games this year in losses. Marquette on the road, Iowa State at home, Kansas State neutral. Tyrese was 0 for 21 combined in those 3 games. A guy that started 104 games, was a one-time Big 12 freshman of the year, had 3 0-for games from the field. Which Tyrese Hunter shows up is going to tell the story for Texas. Because Texas is good. I'm telling you, Texas is good enough to get to a Sweet 16 if Dylan Dessou and A. Smith are going to play well. They have experience. They're going to play well enough. If Hunter plays well behind them for 2 games in a row, they can beat Tennessee. It's not out of the question. I mean, Rick Barnes has a good team. It's not his normal bully team. They're a little bit more guard-oriented, shoot the 3 more. Dalton Knecht's a really good athlete at the wing. Ziegler's very quick at point guard. So this isn't the Tennessee team that went and bully-balled Duke last year in that second round game. It's a different Tennessee team. Now, Rick will try to bully Texas around. But if Hunter plays well, Texas is really, really good on offense. And that's the one thing about this team that hadn't changed. I mean, so if he plays well, they have a chance. Now, I'll say this. Texas has been a 7 seed 4 times since 1999. That's when Rick Barnes got there. Texas is 3-1 in 7-10 games. The only loss was Rick's first year in 99-00. They lost to Purdue 58-54. Then in 08-09, they beat Minnesota. That was A.J. Abrams had a big game against Minnesota. Then they lost to number 2 seed Duke. At 13-14, they beat Arizona State 87-85. Cam Ridley had a really good game. They lost to 2 seed Michigan, who was really good that year. I mean, they got blown out in that game. And then 2 years ago, Chris Beard's only season in Austin. Texas was a 7 seed. And beat Virginia Tech 81-73 and then lost to 2 seed Purdue 81-71. So Texas has never as a 7 seed advance to the Sweet 16 in the last, or never in the last 25 years. And Texas has never been to back-to-back Elite Eights before either. So just something to know there. And so just a couple of facts there headed into the tournament.
I would say this, the interesting thing, that second round game, Jerry, that you mentioned, it's virtually a Tennessee home game.
Oh, yeah.
Because Knoxville is just over the mountains from Charlotte. I mean, literally, you go over the Appalachians or the Rocky Mountains or the Smoky Mountains, and you're there in Charlotte.
And Virginia Virginia is as well. That's one of the reasons I'd rather play Colorado State, honestly. I mean, Virginia's a home game, too. It's an ACC home game.
Yep. Well,
and everybody already hates Texas, so, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, your point about Tyrese Hunter, though, is just, I mean, he is what he is, and that's inconsistent. I mean, I used to say this about Texas quarterback play for between Colt McCoy and Sam Ellinger. It was consistently inconsistent. That's you could rely on it being inconsistent. It could, I mean, Tyrone Swoops against Iowa State, what he hit 18 in a row or something and then go 2 of 10 the next game, you know. Tyrese Hunter is consistently inconsistent.
Yes.
And the highs are the highs and the lows are the lows. And so relying on people like that when all the chips are on the table, typically not a good thing. Doesn't mean they can't hit it, though. Doesn't mean they can't hit it. I do want to add this. If they get Virginia, obviously, it's a rematch for Caden Shedrick's old team, the forward center slash player for the University of Texas that came in and has played for them this year. Or if they get Colorado State, think about this. Longhorn football team and basketball team could be playing Colorado State in this calendar year. Because Longhorns have the Rams in regular season in football preseason.
That's cool.
Yeah, Colorado State's best guard is from Allen High School in Texas as well. Was part of a really good team in Allen. They have another guard. I think their third guard, first guard off the bench is from Waxahachie. So a couple of DFW area guards there. And anybody that knows guards in DFW, man, they can go. So Colorado State obviously recruits Texas in hoops. Tough conference they're coming out of. I mean, they're ready. Colorado State was in the tournament 2 years ago. Lost in the first round. So they have a couple of guys. Obviously, these teams that get in, they're all seniors. Four-year guys, five-year guys, and a lot of transfers. Colorado State has probably three guys that were on that team that lost in a tournament. So they're not without success. But that's the other thing with Texas, man. I mean, here's the thing. Tyrese Hunter's played in 2 Sweet 16s and an Elite Eight. Dylan Mitchell's played in a Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, right? Brock Cunningham has now been – to Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. I mean, so Max Asemus has played in the Sweet 16 game. Caden Shedrick's playing the NCAA tournament. Texas has a ton. Dylan Dessou, obviously, he didn't get to play in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight because he was hurt, but these guys have a lot of NCAA tournament experience. That's the one thing Texas has going for them. If they can't put it together, if Tyrese can't just find a little consistency for a week or so here, man, that's going to be a tough one for Texas because this is an experienced team in the NCAA tournament with really good offensive players.
Texas plays 5:50 on Thursday afternoon, by the way.
Is that out now?
Yep, it's out now. And so CJ just texted us all. CJ actually will be joining us this second half of this hour. Jerry's got to get on a plane to come back home. So CJ Vogel will be joining us. Rod and I will be here for the remainder of the hour as well. We'll talk a little bit more basketball. We'll talk about football next. That's going to be what I've got circled next. Rod Babers, 2 days away, baby.
From
spring football, Longhorns take to the practice field, Denius Fields at 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning. You've been through these personally. You're just coming back. These guys, all the players are just coming back from spring break. You're hoping they didn't party too hard, right? But hopefully they all got back tonight, go to school tomorrow, then up early for practice on Tuesday morning. What are your thoughts on the Longhorns and their first spring practice of 2024?
Yeah, it is interesting. Jerry and I were talking about this, and CJ as well, the new era of NIL. These guys, you know, they have different spring breaks than we had back in the day. They're more exotic, right? A little bit more lavish than we had back in the day. So, yeah, I mean, I stayed around the state of Texas most of the time. I mean, I was either in H-Town or I probably just stayed in Austin. So that was pretty much, you know, my spring break. And it, you know, because of my circumstances, I was pretty much working out. You know, I mean, I was working out and I was still close either to the program physically because I was in Austin or in H-Town. I didn't party too much. There wasn't much going on. I was just hanging out with the family. So I really can't relate to these guys that they're going off to these exotic locales. Different level, man. And I'm happy for them. But I will say this, for most of the guys that, and I still, like I said, I still remember guys that had that mindset. I imagine they still have this mindset today that you never stop working. You always find a way to get some work in. Whether that be, I was talking to, you know, some players about how now these guys, you know, they cycle at home, right? They, you know, they cycle, they find, they do yoga, they find different ways to get a workout in, even when it's on in downtime. So, you know, and you got to be disciplined enough to not abuse things, whether you, you know, alcohol or whether it's other stuff, you know, not abuse it. Yeah. You're an athlete. Your body's a fine tuned machine. So hopefully you guys still have that. You have that mindset. Now, trust me, I play with a lot of guys when they worked hard, but they also partied hard. Usually I would say that's like the linemen. Linemen, man, they just, they work hard. They grind weight room out there, but man, when they sound the party, man, it's mostly defensive linemen, but offensive linemen get down too. I would say those are the guys you got to watch in the downtime. Like they seem to splurge. They seem to, you know, I mean, they go up. To me, in my time, like I said, I'm not trying to stereotype too much, but most of the skill guys, I would say, yeah, they partied, but you know, they still got the work in. If you're looking for guys who didn't get the work in, but also was just partying in downtime, it was the lineman to worry about. Like, nah, man, hey, man, you still need to go for a little run. You still need to, don't eat too much. Don't get extreme at the buffet. Don't be wilding out, that kind of stuff. It was the lineman. So I hate to throw that out there, but that's the truth.
Hey, Rod, there's a reason they got a little belly, buddy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. They don't like to mix the two. Like when it's off time for the linemen, they are off. Like, I'm off. I ain't doing a damn thing. When it's time to work, I work. It's like, no, man, you still gotta make sure you're disciplined enough in your diet and, you know, your workouts. It's like, hey, man, I'm gonna get a workout in, you know, just to lose some weight. I'll go, you know, get a lift in, whatever it may be. So that's, and I'm sure the players even have workouts now. They got so many resources. They got dietitians and nutritionists, and I'm sure they got actually like a spring break workout plan so they can have downtime. You know, so your muscles and everything can recover, but you can also get a little bit of work in. They're way more advanced than we were. We were just told don't go to jail, and you know what I mean, that, and don't do nothing stupid, and then the kind of the basic stuff. These guys, they on a different level. You know what I mean?
Don't go to jail. Don't go to jail. And sometimes it's just simple, right?
Yeah. It's just simple. We get that straight up.
Hey, Bobby, Jared, what about you 2 days out? Thoughts in where this thing's headed right now for the Longhorns?
I think these guys are going to be jacked up. I think they're going to be ready. I think these vacations, even though they are lavish, and congrats to them being in the initial NIL world before this thing all regulates on some form or fashion. Congrats to this group of guys, that 21 through, I think, 26 class of kids is going to have it best, maybe through 27. But I think these guys are going to be jacked up. I think they're going to have something to prove this year. I'm going to stay on that horse, man, until I get bucked off. I think this team has they got close, but they didn't quite get there. And it's a great year to be Sarkisian, Tory Becton. I think it's going to be a focus team. I'm so excited. Somebody asked earlier, will we get an injury report? So just to lay out the schedule, first practice is at 9 a.m. on Tuesday. Sarkisian will meet with the media after that practice. So that's when we'll probably get those updates on who was not out there and the why. And then obviously the following day is the Texas Pro Day, which Quinn will throw at the Pro Day. So it's not just spring practice for Quinn, which is number one, but that's a big day for Quinn. I mean, there's every NFL team will be represented. It's going to be the new look physical Quinn. It'll be a chance for him to throw right there in front of a lot of NFL teams. And so I think that's big. It's a big week for Quinn. Aside from spring practices, it's that first impression of your third year as a starting quarterback begins March 20th in front of those NFL scouts. But I think this team's going to be so jacked up. I think they're going to be excited. I expect a ton of energy. The thing that excites me is this is the most early enrollees Texas has ever had in a class. 17 guys. Plus now portal, there's 24 new players for this spring. And, you know, in some years in the past in spring football, you wondered if Texas had enough offensive linemen to have a quality spring. Yeah. Now you're sitting here with almost three deep. You are three deep of offensive linemen in spring football. That is a great place to be for Steve Sarkisian and Kyle Flood.
Well, I would even add this to that comment about, where they're at and all this other stuff. You and I are going to be out there on Tuesday morning, Jerry, and we're going to literally be checking the roster they give us over and over to make sure we're, because part of this is just getting to know all the new faces.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's, you turn over 27, 28 players, I think, or 25 players, whatever it is. It's going to be tough on us a little bit, but the viewing window will be about 15 to 30 minutes. That's typically what it is on the first day. Sark will meet with the media. Then we'll have pro day on Wednesday. Then we'll come back and meet with players on Thursday. So that's the media plan. That's all that the sports information department has told us thus far that will be available. We don't know anything beyond Thursday.
Here it is. Texas women got number one seed. Donald Britt, thank you. Texas women get the number one seed. That means they're probably number four seed overall in the tournament. So big for them. Hey, to Bobby, that's awesome. Congrats to Vic Schaefer. You lose your TJ Ford, and that's what he lost, and you're still a number one seed. I know Madison Booker's his Kevin Durant. You had both of them on the same team, which kind of really sucks now going to the tournament that you had a real shot. I don't know if anybody will beat South Carolina, but you had a legit shot this year. But anyways, Bobby, Rod and CJ and I talked about it Friday. But you know what the other thing I'm looking forward to is that first day? Remember in August when we were there and Jordan Whittington, Xavier Worthy, and A.D. Mitchell walked out to the field from Newhouse, walked over to the bubble, the practice field, earlier than any other player outside of the specialist. And we all looked at each other and commented, and Bob, we commented and said, put that in the memory bank, right? Yeah. Those guys, both days we were there, were the first players out to practice other than the specialist. They even beat some of the coaches to the practice field. We locked that away. You know, kind of like that first practice Arch Manning was ever at Texas in the spring. It was not spring. But he got off the bus and sprinted in just like he used to do in high school. I was like, okay, well, that guy's fearless. I like that. He's fearless. Most guys don't just in their first practice ever at Texas get off the bus and sprint in like the starting quarterback at Texas. I was like, okay, he brought the same fearlessness. That's a good thing to see. But I look forward to kind of the little things you notice that maybe aren't talked about much that are become so meaningful later in a season.
All right. Hey, I've got some other things to say here too. Rod, you were talking about not abusing alcohol earlier. Remember that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They probably need to tell the Michigan coaching staff about that. Michigan's a line coach. Got into some trouble. He's been suspended 10 days into the job. It's his third run-in, apparently, with alcohol while driving. I think one of them got pled down. Another one may have been a straight DUI. But anyways, 10 days into the job, he's already on the sideline. CJ did a video, by the way, guys, and mentioned the potential of the defensive line transfers, not just at Michigan, but also UCLA, et cetera. And our video that had mentioned those players, the comment section got overrun by some Wolverine fans coming over and said, what are you talking about? It's more likely that Arch Manning transfers to Michigan.
Here's the problem for Michigan. Here's the problem. This, and I'm not saying these guys are going to leave. Obviously, people know who we're talking about, Graham and Grant. But here's the problem. With Jim Harbaugh, other than Connor Stallions, things were pretty smooth, right? Sharon Moore, one of his first key hires, already gone.
Yep.
Before spring practice.
It didn't keep the defensive line coach or the defensive backs coach.
That's right. So what it does is it adds the hint and the element of doubt right out of the gate for Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham. whoa, things aren't the same as they used to be. That's the issue that Sharon Moore faces now with some of those guys. I'm not saying they don't, but if they do, that's why.
I wonder if because isn't Wink Martindale the defensive coordinator there now?
Yeah,
guy from the NFL.
Yep.
And that defensive line coach, is he originally from the Michigan staff, or did Wink Martindale bring him in?
Michigan staff. Jerome Moore brought him in and brought him over from Wisconsin. And Luke.
Okay. Perry. See, so, I wonder. It might actually for Wink, just to throw it out for Wink, I don't know what he's going to do. But Wink Martindale is well known in the NFL, you know, for years. He's got a lot of connections. I wonder for him if it may be a blessing in disguise, because his system is very specific, because he blitzes a ton. Yep. And he may want a defensive line coach that really knows his system instead of bringing in a guy he's got to teach his system to.
Good point.
Throwing it out there.
Could be. But here's the reality.
If they fire him, I don't know what they're doing.
I think the Michigan fans are a little naive as it relates to NIL. I can just tell you, because they did not have to go heavy NIL with Jim Harbaugh, and that's not going to be the case going forward. He kind of had that upperclassman buy-in. That's going to be a little bit different going forward.
Well, it's the same at Bama. Same thing with Bama, right? Bama was getting the Nick Saban discount with a lot of players. Yeah, like
100%.
Nick Saban's sales pitch was, listen, man, look at my resume. I think you're an NFL player. I can get you drafted. I can maximize your potential, and you'll win championships, and you'll play with great players. Guys are like, you know what? Hell yeah, I'm going there. Even though I was offered more money, who gives a damn? That's Nick freaking Saban. Same thing with Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh's like, hey, man, I'm an NFL guy. You're an NFL player. Come play for us, man. Trust me, I know how it looks. I know the path to the NFL. And I'm telling you, I can put you on the right path. Come to me. We'll play, elite teams. You'll play with great players. We'll play for championships. Sark is trying to actually build the same sales pitch right now. That's kind of what he's trying to do. When you lose those type of dynamic personalities, and by the way, Nick Saban was there, and so is Jim Harbaugh. I mean, what's the sales pitch isn't as strong with those other guys. They don't have the resume. They don't have the clout to walk into a living room and say, man, I'm Jim Harbaugh. Everybody know me. I'm Nick Saban. Everybody know me. The other guys, I'm sure they're good coaches, but they don't have that card to play.
Well, I'll say this. Sharon Moore's not getting the discount if Kirby Smart's not getting it anymore either. It is what college football is about right now. Sorry about my camera shaking there. Hey, Jerry, before you take off, a couple of news and notes you had out of the Houston Combine for Under Armour this weekend.
Yeah. So the Houston Under Armour camp, I was not there. Obviously, I had a trip planned for months before the dates came out. I actually filled the camp, the Under Armour camp. I still do a little work for those guys, Billy Tucker, Tom Luganville, Craig Hobart, some really good friends of mine. But I was not there today, but I've talked to people that were there. Lance Jackson was tremendous today. There's some videos out there of him. And what's so impressive, and I went to Pleasant Grove a few weeks ago. What's so impressive about Lance Jackson is his maturity, his understanding, and then it's just his overall athleticism at 6'5 and a half, 6'6, 255, 260. I think there were reports he was 263. I haven't had that confirmed, but when I was out there a few weeks ago, it was 255 to 260. But on the videos you saw, Rod, and we've talked about this before, a guy that lines up as a young defensive lineman and his butt's higher than his shoulders in his stance, those guys get it. Because you rarely watch tape and see a guy's ass above his shoulders in his stance. It's normally the other way around, and those guys then pop up right off the football.
Yep.
Lance Jackson, at a young age, understands that. And his quickness, power to speed was on full display today. And absolutely it was a very impressive. By the way, Landon Rink, Under Armour game invite today out of that camp as well. Obviously, Lance Jackson was already a guy that had a combine. Kelshawn Johnson, all reports, I was told he was the toughest guy to guard today. Kalik Lockett, very good. Andrew Marsh, smooth. Really good young linebackers, Kosiak Paula, some of those guys, those 26s. But Lance Jackson was a big-time standout today, as was Kelshawn Johnson. Kalik Lockett, who couldn't make the Dallas camp last week because of a college visit, he made the trip down to Houston, got there early in the morning and competed. What does that tell you? You want Kalik Lockett. He didn't have to come to that. He has 35 offers. He's already in. He's already has all-star game invites. That's a competitor. That's what you like to see.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, thank you for joining us, bud. You have a great
day. Hey, Bobby, real quick, Brandon Brown was not there. Brandon Brown's scheduled to be in Austin Friday for an unofficial visit with that California Power team, which we'll be talking about that all week.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, Jerry, thank you. Be safe, bud. Travel
safe. Thanks, Jerry.
All right. We're going to bring in CJ now, too. How you doing, CJ?
Hey.
What's going on, guys? How we been? Happy
Sunday. We're waiting on you to say hello there. Hey, CJ, you're also not wearing green. It's St. Patrick's Day.
No. It's Sunday inside. It was rainy a little bit today in Austin. I wasn't seeing the sun too much today, so I was staying in.
By the way, Spurs game, I want to say this. Somebody sent me this. Matt, if you'll pull this up. We just talked about the Texas women getting a number one seed in the women's tournament. Matt, I sent you a photo. Texas is hosting Moody is hosting some San Antonio Spurs games.
A friend
of mine sent this picture in just moments ago, said all the stars are out here in Austin tonight. There's a little Steve Sarkisian sighting at the Spurs game tonight for you guys. He's on hand trying to get ready for that. Hey, let's take some questions if y'all don't mind. Did you have something?
I think the guy he's hanging out with is David Mulligetta, who's the NFL agent. Super agent. Yeah, who's like the agent of, I mean, he's got tons of guys. He's Quandre Diggs' agent. But he's one of the probably top three biggest agents in the league right now. And he's a lifetime long one. Lives in Austin.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Austin.
I went to the Spurs game Friday at the Moody Center, actually. Really, really fun environment. They sold it out. It was awesome. 16,000 people filled the stands. LaMarcus Aldridge, courtside right next to the Nuggets bench. Really cool. They honored him and Chris Bosh as well, who was also courtside. So the stars were out in Austin at the Moody Center. Really cool to see the NBA taking over in Austin as well.
No, Wimby, man. You got to see Wimby. Wimby's one of them athletes you got to see live and in person. It's not a lot of athletes that – I would say are on that list where, man, I got to try to see them live. Like LeBron's on that list. Hell, for me, Patrick Mahomes was, but not for a lot of people. But that's a rare list of athletes where they are basically they're a spectacle unto themselves. And that's what Wimby is. Like, I don't even need to know who Wimby's playing. I don't care. I want to watch him go up and down the court, some freak of nature we've never seen before. Like, I wish I could have seen Shaq. Like, he's going to be on that list of, like, all-time great players you want to see in person.
Definitely. I saw Shaq in the high school state championship game.
Oh man, that was great. I mean, that was awesome. Like, what the
hell? Antonio Cole, baby. Yeah. Hey, it wasn't, by the way, that was not a 5A school back in the day. That was Shaq versus 3A.
What?
Yes.
Oh man, that's
you talking about unfair. They had the 1-4 zone. It wasn't the 4-1 zone. Diamond in one.
It was the
one in diamond.
That's
what it was.
Yeah, that's wild, man.
Good stuff. Hey, we got some other news and notes we want to get to. I mentioned earlier the baseball team won 4-3 today, but they lost Friday and Saturday. They're 3-3 in league play. David Pierce right now has some issues, particularly on the mound, it looks like. Just not being able to hold leads and opponents scoring a lot of points right now as well. All right, we're going to take a look at some more questions from you guys now the rest of the way here. Let's start with Justin Yarbrough with the Super Chat. Rod, I want you to answer this one. Will Gunnar Helm be drafted? I'm thinking he will be if he can improve like he has every year and still be an upgrade over the tight ends before Sark came. Thanks, guys. Ready for Tuesday. What do you think? Gunnar Helm draftable or on the cusp, undrafted free agent? Where you got him? He's a year away.
Yeah, he's a year away. Thank you for that, Justin. I would say he has to take a huge leap this year because we just haven't seen the productivity, right? I mean, Sark, all that productivity for the tight end position was funneled toward JT Sanders because JT Sanders is a matchup nightmare for any defense. with Gunnar Helm. I'm not sure that is the case, but it'll be up to Sark to prove that. Now, Sark has said the tight end position is the second most important position in his offense, you know, behind the quarterback position. So if Gunnar Helm is now the frontline tight end, he's the guy. Now they brought in Amari Nyblack, who may be a better option at vertical shots downfield. But if Gunnar Helm's going to be the guy they kind of funnel all the tight end production to this year, then he can prove that. Right now, I just haven't seen the production. Not saying he can't do it. Obviously, Sark likes him, and he's got, you know, really good overall skill set. I'd like to see him improve as a blocker too. I think he's kind of an average to below average blocker right now. And I think that was probably the case for JT Sanders too. He was probably an average blocker as well, but he was such an elite downfield threat that, you know, and he had only been playing the position for what, 3 years. He was a five-star just overall athlete coming in. He has higher upside than a guy like Gunnar Helm. So I don't know if Gunnar Helm's got that kind of upside. It's up to Sark to showcase that. That'll be a big – can Sark showcase his overall skill set as a tight end? Because right now, I don't know if he's a guy that can consistently beat man-to-man coverage of a safety, beat man-to-man coverage of versatile linebackers. That's going to be the question. Amari Nyblack actually is shown that, yes, he can. He can be a vertical threat like that. So it's going to be up to Gunnar Helm to take that leap, you know, for trying to maximize his skill set. His athletic profile as a tight end. But also, I want to see what Sark does. Sark has a really deep wide receiving core, right? This is one of the questions I'm pondering too. Really deep wide receiving core. So is he going to expand his circle of trust of wide receivers? If he does that, then that's a lot of production that's going to get funneled there. What is he going to do with the running backs? What's the target share there? Hell, if he's listening to Rod B, it's going to be more pony packages. So that means less tight ends on the field, or fewer tight ends on the field, I should say. Are we going to see some of that red package from Alabama with the 10 personnel, one back, zero tight ends, where there's no tight ends on the field at all? That's not really in Sark's really nature as a play caller. But like I said, at one time when his wide receiving core was deep, he decided to, you know, funnel usage towards the strengths of the roster, which he's done recently with the two back sets, I think, too. So one of my questions is, where is the 12 personnel package going to go? Is it going to increase or decrease because JT Sanders is not going to – we're going to see fewer 12 personnel snaps because the 6-0 line package has also taken some of those 12 personnel. They run big 12 and they run big 11 personnel with the extra offensive lineman out there, Malik Ogbo. So that is a great question. I think a lot of it is up to, will Sark showcase his talent? Because I don't know what his talent – I don't really know what he brings to the table offensively, because he's just been a complimentary piece to the offense. He hasn't been showcased. This will be the year.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
CJ, where you got him? Where do you got Gunnar Helm?
I'm
a little bit like Rod in that it's a prove-it situation, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, I think he has the talent. I think he's a late-round draft pick, potentially, if he keeps growing. The thing with him, Rod and CJ, to me, he always had the long, lanky build doesn't always work in the NFL, right? He's going to have to play on the line of scrimmage because he's not a downfield threat. Like, right. He's not Travis Kelce or Rob Gronkowski that can go run 4.55 or whatever they can run, right? But he can run well enough, but he's going to have to be an on the line of scrimmage guy. And every year, to Justin Yarbrough's point, he's raised the bar for himself. I mean, he went from a really skinny tight end prospect to a guy that looked pretty good last year at times and started filling out. I don't know if he'll be drafted, but I think he's got a chance to make a pro team.
I do too. I think he does have an NFL future. And to y'all's point, he has taken those steps year in and year out. Rod, even more so in the blocking category, I think he's taken the steps to be he can become a plus blocker there. The thing there on the line of scrimmage for a tight end is more mental than anything else. Are you willing to go put your hat on a guy that's 320 when you're coming across the line of scrimmage for a wham or one of those pulling blocks that they ask line or tight ends to do so often? That's really where you'll see the improvement heading into the SEC. He's going to be tested often, but more so when he is on the field, I think he takes advantage of that opportunity a little bit more so than guys in that kind of same role that he has. 14 catches, 190 yards last year, 2 touchdowns. What was really encouraging to me was when Texas needed him to stand up and be that guy at the tight end spot, he did so. Four receptions, 67 yards, and a score against Oklahoma in the game in which Jatavion Sanders was not 100%. Big games, they needed him to fill the shoes, and I thought he had a pretty admirable game there. If you can continue that trajectory of incline in play right there, I think that you're going to become a pretty good player for the Texas Longhorns. And as a result, and because of the offense Sarkisian runs and, you know, the strength and conditioning program Torrey Becton has behind the scenes, you're going to have yourself in a position at the end of the day to be an NFL tight end. It all, again, depends on what kind of steps can you continue to see Gunnar Helm take. And this spring, I'm looking for him to become a more physical blocker, a more willing blocker. And obviously, like we've talked about, that downfield ability, what can he bring into his bag as a result of this spring? Because that's ultimately going to be a big selling point for NFL teams if he can become a plus in both of those sides of the ball at the tight end spot.
I just like Gunnar as an overall prospect. Brandon Ralston has another question here for us. Super chat. Thank you, Brandon. I'm curious, will we take both D tackles from Michigan? I'm going to say this. Yes is the answer. But those are also top-end draft pick defensive tackles. I am told that Texas is looking for two, not just one, but two defensive tackles in the portal. Still, even though they already got one.
I like that. Okay.
They're not that. Look, Steve Sarkisian is not here to play. I'm just telling you guys that. He wants it. He thinks he has a team that can win it all this year. Now, whether they can or not, it's a different story. But he's got the receivers, he's got the running backs, he's got everything on defense, I think, except for possibly defensive tackles. He's going to roll the dice and try to go get those. Those guys may not, neither one of them may go into the portal. TJ, I was talking about this, and you made that mention video this morning about it, and the Wolverine fans came out and, look, we're monitoring those guys. We're monitoring the guy at UCLA. There's a half dozen guys out there that Texas would jump on if they were to go in the portal. We're not saying they're in the portal. We're not saying they're going in the portal. But the reality of it is Texas is going to be aggressive in that category, and I don't want people to take it otherwise. Hey, CJ, this one is for you from Ryan Nelson. Thank you, Ryan. CJ, if we get swept by Air Force, Chris Del Conte has a decision. I'm guessing this is talking about head football coach David Pierce, who's been to this College World Series 3 of his 5 years, three of six, one of which got taken away, by the way, from him because of COVID. So really 3 of 5 years. What are your thoughts on this, CJ?
Yeah, I mean, if you get swept by Air Force, it gets a little interesting because now you're sitting at 11-10, 21 games in. The series loss to Washington probably wasn't what Texas fans wanted to see. It wasn't what this team needed to see on the field as well. But my point and what I think Texas fans kind of harp a little bit too much on for David Pierce is there's such turnover for his roster year in and year out. It feels like it just takes time. It takes time each year. We've seen slow starts seemingly every year besides one where we've seen, it take about 15, 20, 25 games before we really understand the identity of this Texas program for a given season. You know, we've seen Texas start 5-7 multiple times through the first 12. Now that we're 21 games in, or 19, excuse me, the leash gets a little shorter, but you start to get a little bit of an idea of what this team can be. I think by the middle of the Big 12 schedule is that when you really start getting an idea of this team. We've seen it again, time in, time out. Texas baseball figures out who they are deeper in the season than I think most Texas teams do athletically. My question with this team, who's the star power for this team right now? If it's LeBaron Johnson on the mound on Friday, he's got to step up. If it's Porter Brown, as we kind of expected in that cleanup spot in the lineup, he's got to step up. He's hitting about 235 right now. The slugging isn't great. He had a good run at the back end of that tournament in Houston, but where's that consistency been? You don't have a Cody Clemens. You don't have a Hispanic Titanic. Who's going to be that guy in the middle of your lineup that invokes fear? Right now it's Peyton Powell, but he needs a Robin to his Batman. There's not another guy right now in that lineup that's really standing out like you anticipated coming in. And when you don't have that and your pitching isn't great, your starting pitching on Friday and Saturday isn't great, add to the fact that your bullpen has all sorts of question marks, then you really start getting that hairy situation as a manager in the baseball world. So it's got to turn around, and I'm looking at that Baylor series coming up next weekend as one that Texas can really start getting the ball rolling again, because then you got Kansas State coming up on the road the next weekend after that. You can string off about five out of six games, I think, is a really good run over the next week or so. If so, Texas is going to turn that corner, and I'm feeling confident that Texas is going to find a way into that, you know, kind of upper echelon of the Big 12 moving forward.
I misspoke earlier, guys. I said Texas is now 3-3 in conference play. Obviously, Texas and Washington are not in the same conference. That's my bad. My apologies there for you guys as well. Hey, Matt, I want to bring up this photo. Here's some more photos, guys, from the Spurs game tonight in Austin. Look at that trio. That's Brandon Harris on the far left, Texas Director of Player Personnel. In the middle, I believe, is Jonte Cook. And on the far right, big old Anthony Hill there hanging out.
Rod, did you ever spend your spring break with the feet on the wood at an NBA game before?
No, I didn't. I've never been courtside actually at an NBA game. I've been close to the court, but never courtside when feet are on the court. No, man. I've never done that. So, hey, these young bucks, like I said, they live in large, man. And it's the greatest time in the history of college sports to be a college athlete. It's never been done.
Rod, I've seen your basketball tickets. You're in the first five or six rows, my man.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. Like I said, I'm close, but not on the court.
Okay, not on the court. First five or six rows, still pretty good. I want to say thanks one more time. I appreciate everybody's questions. We're going to get to yours next. That's what we're going to do in the next segment. But for right now, I want to come back and just say thank you to our sponsor. Our newest sponsor is Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. Joe has been providing mortgages in and around Austin and the state of Texas for more than three decades. In fact, he was my mortgage broker more than 25 years ago for my first ever home purchase. You can trust him. He's reliable, knowledgeable, has done this for so long. He also has two degrees from the University of Texas and worked with a number of different UT athletes throughout his career. Joe's also a proud Navy veteran as well. Give him a call, 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, that's 512-663-4744. That's Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. All right, let's turn back a little bit here and get going on some questions. We had some that I thought were coming in. Let's turn back to basketball a little bit, okay? And CJ, you and Jerry are resident basketball experts. Jerry had a comment here that he thought Texas actually matched up better with Colorado State. What do you think, from Nathan? What do you think, Texas match up better with Virginia or Colorado State in your mind?
Yeah, no. Virginia's not been the team that we've seen Virginia be in years past, especially when they ran off into a national championship run. But, you know, anytime you get into a rock fight with them, that's not what you want to see, especially with a team like Texas that likes to run and shoot and it kind of live and die a little bit by the three. Obviously, D'Souza is going to be a big part of that as well. But with A. Smith, Tyrese Hunter, I.T. Horton, some of these guys who really get hot behind the line of the three-point line, getting into a low possession game with Virginia doesn't bode well for the Longhorns. I'd personally like to see Colorado State, but that's not to say that Colorado State also doesn't bring some matchup issues to the Longhorns. They play a very fun style of basketball. But again, if you can stay away from that Virginia team who likes to hold teams below 55, 50 points even, that's not a recipe for success for Texas. You need to be able to launch those threes, get the extra possessions, because that's a big strength of this team. I know Texas fans are kind of rolling their eyes right now thinking, strength of this team, you know, what are those? But, you know, you do have you know, plus shooters on this roster that can catch fire in an instant. Listen, we saw Tyrese Hunter, for all his faults, go for 30 against Oklahoma just over a week ago. We know he can do that. Max Asemus is top 10 all-time in points. Those guys can get really, really hot behind the line, the three-point line. Again, I think you want to stay away from Virginia and that slow pace as much as possible.
Hey, Matt, if you'll bring up that Midwest region lineup, I just want to go back over it for people that are just now joining us. We've had a couple of hundred people join us since the start of the show. Texas is in the Midwest region, but their sub-region is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Texas plays the winner of a Virginia-Colorado State play-in game on Tuesday. Texas plays the winner of that at 5:50 on Thursday. Then if Texas were to win that game, they go to the round of 32 and play the winner of Tennessee versus St. Peter's. St. Peter's, by the way, Tennessee, by the way, just in Knoxville, literally is about, what, a three-hour drive to Charlotte, and they will travel. So that's going to essentially be a Tennessee home game, we believe, at this point, too. So good luck to them. The women's basketball team, by the way, ended up being the number one or one of the one seeds across the NCAA tournament. So congratulations to them. All right, Rod, I want to get this. It's a two-part question from two different people. Travis McDermott, should I feel disappointed about Sadir's weight? We needed him this year. And then David Williams asked this. If I was involved in the Texas strength and conditioning program, I would enforce a rule that Cam Williams and Sadir Mitchell had to weigh in every day. What do you think of that?
Like I said, when I see the weights of the guys, the assumption is, all right, there's a plan here, right? Because you got to be keeping track of players' weights throughout the off-season workouts, throughout spring. And like I said, I don't know if they are, but I assume they are because they kept track of our big guys' weights all throughout off-season workouts and throughout spring and then two-a-days, trying to make sure it was under control for the guys who were, you know, just honestly just big humans. I mean, just like Sark said, they're just big humans. And you don't want to get to the point where their weight affects their performance in a negative way. It helps. Avondre Sweat was 365. He said he played at, but he played really well. I mean, he won the Outland Trophy playing at that weight, and he went to the combine at that weight. And by the way, at the combine, you could argue now that hurt his draft stock, right? That did not help his draft stock going there because there aren't many humans that have been that big in the NFL where that weight has translated to them playing at a really high level. Not saying he can't be the outlier there as well. So yeah, it's concerning to me. I would assume that they were tracking it and that they would have been trying to keep it under control or put him on some type of, I don't know, regimen, some other diet. They got nutritionists, all that stuff. And maybe he is just a big human and he plays really well at that weight. Not many human beings on this planet can play football effectively at 370 some pounds. And so I can't wait to, I want to see it. I want to see it for myself. But I can't imagine that he's playing his best football at 370. Maybe he can go out there and give you some reps at it, but the best version of Sidney Mitchell, there's no way it's at 372. There's no way.
It may be at 372 in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Not right now.
Put on the real kind of physical weight, the adult weight, not
grown man body. Yeah.
Grown man, that's a great way to put it. Yeah. Grown man body.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I said, maybe his body is different. Maybe he's on an accelerated path to, you know, his development. We don't know. We got to see it. We got to see it for ourselves. I just want to see the way he carries it, and I want to see it, get a chance to go out to practice and potentially to watch that young man. But yeah, I think if it's a problem, basically meaning the coaches have kind of talked to him about it and they're trying to keep it under control and they want him at a desired weight. And yet he has not been disciplined enough to follow that path. If that's the case, I'm not saying it is at all. Then it's a real problem. But like my assumption is the coaches are very aware of it, and this is kind of where they want him. It's the same thing with Savion Redd. Where we're like, why did Savion Redd gain 26 pounds? What the hell happened there? We're like, well, It must be a plan. Sark wants him to be a short yardage goal line back. He wants him to be my version. I tell him the new Kyle Juszczyk, kind of a Frankenstein monster of a fullback in Sark's offense in the pony package. Because there's got to be a plan when the guy gains that much weight or when the guy's that big. What is Shedeur Mitchell come in at? What was the weight that he came in at initially? Do we know
probably
that?
That range, to be honest with you.
Okay. There you go. I got. If he was gaining weight, I guess it would be an issue, but maybe that's just his weight. We got to see it. We got to see him move in it, and we got to see what type of, like I said, explosive first step he has with that weight, and if he can move around other human beings and all that kind of stuff with that weight. That's a lot of weight, though, man. It's a lot.
Yeah.
I could not agree more.
I could not agree more. Hey, a couple other things. Donald Harvey asked in the chat what time the game is, for what time tip is. It's 5:50 is what we're being told, Donald. 5:50 on Thursday afternoon. Yep. That's Central Time, not the East Coast time.
All right, and it's going to be exciting that it's going to start the second half of games Thursday night. So you're going to get your afternoon games. The game right before that one, the Texas game tips off, will be around 4. So those four games that you see at a time will be ending up. Texas will start the second half of games for the night slate, which will be a little exciting. They'll probably have a 20-25 minute window before the next game tips off. So a little bit more of a national audience for the Longhorns in their 7-10 matchup with winner Virginia and Colorado State.
Hey, this is a good question here. We talked about Baron Sorrell, Gunnar Helm. Guys were talking about how Baron Sorrell is very similar to Gunnar Helm in the fact that Baron's just played more, I think.
Yeah.
Been called on to play more. He didn't have a JT Sanders at his position. Mm-hmm. But he's very similar in that regard from a draft perspective. But look at this question, Rod and CJ. How many Texas wide receivers will be drafted in 2025? Now, to be clear, Jonte Cook can't go pro. None of the guys that Texas recruited out of high school really can. But Isaiah Bond will be draft eligible if he chooses to forego his senior year. Matthew Golden, same thing. Silas Bolden, obviously, would be in that category as well. How many receivers of those three newcomers do you think gets drafted in 2025? One for sure.
Yep.
One for sure. Isaiah Bond's getting drafted.
Yeah.
Too explosive, 10,500 meter speed, has been productive. The question is, does a guy like Silas Bolden get drafted, or is he an undrafted free agent even though he's productive? Matthew Golden, it's whether or not he's even going to go pro next year.
Yeah. It's actually a funny question because you're limited to only four options, 0, 1, 2, or 3, you know, but there's only going to be three draft eligible guys on the roster for the next year's draft. I'll go with two. I do think a year in the system for Silas Bolden with the production that he's had at Oregon State previously is going to bode very well for his NFL draft stock. What that is, I'm not sure. There aren't many 5'8", 5'9", wide receivers in the NFL. Fewer that are drafted very highly. With that said, you're seeing more of a switch in the NFL to some of these kind of scat back wide receivers that have that smaller frame that can come across the line of scrimmage as a jet motion or an orbit motion even and still be effective down the field. Silas Bolden plays significantly larger than he's listed at. If you watch any of the tape, his ability to go up, make big plays down the field vertically, again, he's not one of those guys that you saw a whole lot of on the underneath. They were throwing the ball pretty far down the field for him at Oregon State with DJU. I do think he plays larger than he's listed at, but the question is, what kind of market is there for a 5'8", 5'9 guy? I do think he's going to test very well. We've talked about the speed, the burst, the agility. The acceleration specifically off the line of scrimmage is something that jumps off when you watch him as well. But that's going to be interesting because, Bobby, I'm with you. I do think Isaiah Bond is a guy that you can probably lock up, barring injury, as a guy that will hear his name called very early in next year's draft. Silas Bolden is that guy for me that I'm thinking could push that over the 1.5 kind of line that we're looking at right now.
What about you, Rod? What do you think? I mean, Matthew Golden's a guy that's one of the better kick returners in the country. That's an added value proposition if he were to go pro.
It is an added value. And honestly, if the NFL changes the kick return, which they are thinking about changing their kickoff return to the XFL kickoff return, which is has a 90% return rate as opposed to the really high touchback rate the NFL is dealing with right now, that really would start to increase the value of guys like a Matthew Golden. Not saying he's going to get drafted because of that, but it would increase his value as a priority free agent, somebody that can end up making a roster, because he is an elite kickoff returner. Like, he's one of the best kickoff returners in the country. I don't know if that'll get you drafted simply these days, and if it did, it'll get you drafted really, really late. But I agree with CJ. I think if it's anybody, it would be Silas Bowden, just based on what we've seen, but it would be later on in the draft for a guy that's as small as he is. And I don't think he is I know he's going to test well with the speed, but I do wonder exactly what he'll weigh in at. People forget that X-Man weighed in at 166. You know, I talked to NFL scouts, they're like, yeah, you said he won't, man. He's still 166. And I was like, he can play though. He plays bigger, and he plays, you know, I think his play strength is actually something you can see on film, right? And he plays a more physical style than a guy like that would play. That's what you're saying about Silas Bowden. So I think he could translate to the NFL. I don't know if he's going to get drafted really high. There's no doubt Isaiah Bunn has the potential to be a first-round guy if everything goes right for him.
You just threw me for a loop a little bit with the XFL kickoff thing. Mm-hmm. I'm reading about what it is, and this is for, I'm sure I'm not the only one that didn't know what that was. Here's the XFL's kickoff rule. A kicker lines up at his own 30-yard line with the other 10 members of the kickoff team lining up at the opponent's 35-yard line. So they're all the way on the other side of the field, 5 yards away from the returning team. So it's basically
they're right close.
The kicker's at at his own 30. The defense is at the 35, and the offense is at the 30.
Yep.
The kicker and returner are the only players who can move until the ball is fielded. So basically, that is crazy. That's an interesting. It looks like it's it may or may not happen. Who knows? I mean, they need 20 votes or something like
they
that.
They need 3/4 votes. So they need basically 75% vote. So but there's a lot of momentum for it, because essentially the kickoff returns a dead play. They in the Super Bowl, it was all touchbacks, right? Nobody cares about the kickoff anymore. And they shadow banned it for the most part, because it's the most violent play in football. Hell, I got hurt on kickoffs, but now they found that the XFL kickoff return is a whole lot safer. Like you said, no car collisions. There's no high-speed collisions happening on a football field, because the guys are so close together at 5 yards, they can't really build up this high speed to end up, you know, having those concussions or those high-collision plays. And you almost guarantee there's going to be at least a 15, 20-yard return, because there's so much space. So much space for the returners, depending on how skilled they are. So it's a lot safer for the returners, which means NFL teams may start putting some of their best players, their big money players, back there again. Remember when I was young, hell, Deion Sanders, you know, big money guys. Hell, if not, then Randy Moss would go back there and return kicks. Your big money guys return kicks back in the day. They don't do that now because it's the most violent play in football, and you don't want your big money guys to get hurt. Well, if the injury rate is really low, big money guys don't get hurt, I'll put my big money guys back there, or I'll prioritize it with a guy like a Matthew Golden or a guy like a Keelan Robinson, who are the best kick returners potentially in the draft class, and go, all right, priority free agent, I need that guy, because that guy's going to be my kick returner for the next 5 to 6 years. You know what I mean? Because now it's actually something that can gain me a huge advantage in the hidden yardage department. So, trust me, they pass it. I think they will. The NFL is all about what's the most entertaining product. And the kickoff sucks, because it's not a play nobody cares about anymore. Everybody knows it's going to be a touchback. But now you can infuse drama back into the situation. That's what the NFL wants to do. Now they're going to make that a dramatic play again. And now you ain't going to bathroom breaks or going to get nachos during the kickoff anymore. You're like, damn, I'm sticking around. Because now there are big plays now being made on kickoffs.
I got to add this. It's not just the kickoff in the NFL is literally nobody returns it anymore, because these kickers, they're hitting 65-yard field goals. I mean, they're making a 55-yarder look like chump change.
Exactly.
I mean, they've got such powerful legs and all this other stuff. The other thing I hate about the kickoff now is because there's no actual play. You literally could get a score a touchdown, go to commercial, get a kickoff, then go to commercial, and then you come back out. So literally there's no field of play for, what, 8 to 10 commercials?
You're right.
That's the thing that the NFL does drive me bananas.
I'd like to have sat in that room when that rule is being proposed, because without the visual aid and the way that you kind of have to explain that to a room of executives, owners, or GMs, or whoever is proposing that rule change, I'm sure they're sitting back thinking, I mean, how in the world does this work, Rod? I mean, you sit there, we're going to pull everybody 20 yards away from the kickoff returner. They can't move until there's a green light with the catch. And then, that'll be much more of a better product than what we already expected. That would have been, to be a fly in the wall in that room would have been awesome to hear, because I'm sure a lot of folks would have sat back around and said, what in the world?
Hey, hats off for some people trying to be inventive. I think all right, last question. We're going to end up with this one. Before I let y'all go, and before we end with this question, I want to repeat. Longhorns, number 7 seed in the NCAA tournament in the Midwest region. They play in Charlotte on Thursday at 5:50 against the winner of a play-in game, the Colorado State Rams versus the Virginia Cavaliers. They play the winner of that. They're also in the Tennessee section of the draw. So if they win that play-in, beat the team that plays in winner, then they'll go in and play on Saturday against Rick Barnes and the Volunteers, most likely. So that's one. The women's team, a number 1 seed overall, not overall, but one of the 4 women's seeds. Also, Scottie Scheffler wins the Players Championship. Congrats to the former Longhorn for doing that today. I think he shot a -8, came from out of nowhere to win that. Not out of nowhere, but way back to win that. And then also the Texas baseball team, lost 2 of 3 this weekend to the University of Washington. And one last note, Lance Jackson, the defensive lineman out of Pleasant Grove, who's been on this program with us. It would be unsurprising to me if he now ended up as a 5-star in multiple different recruiting rankings based on how he performed today down in Houston. All right, the last question, leave this one open for everybody. Who is going to be the hardest hitter this year? We need some headhunters. Who's the hardest hitter? Is it Anthony Hill?
It's Anthony Hill. But in the secondary, which I think is where this question's posed to, that's going to be a big question mark. What kind of weight do we see Derek Williams come in at? Can he add to his coverage ability as a headhunter at safety? That'd be interesting. Rod, I'll defer to you here for the safeties, but it's Anthony Hill without a doubt. The way that guy tries to plant people beneath the earth's crust every time he gets his hands on him is one of the most intriguing and interesting things that I see every Saturday for the Longhorns.
Well, yeah, and he just he closes space really well. I mean, he minimizes space really well. And so does Makuba, and Makuba doesn't really hit hard. I mean, in terms of being a headhunter, but he gets there really fast in terms of making plays. That's good. Who's going to try to – I mean, man, Derek Williams, was he suspended for half the game for targeting? It's weird to say, because guys are not –
On a kickoff that wasn't returned.
Yeah, exactly. I think for guys these days, it's tough because they're not programmed, or at least they've been deprogrammed because of the targeting rules and stuff like that, to be headhunters and go after guys. I mean, I remember when, man, we had guys that literally they were trying to – take somebody's head off. They were trying to deliver haymakers. My boy Nathan Vasher was like that, trying to deliver. Hell, Quandre Diggs, as recent as Quandre Diggs, trying to deliver haymakers. I think now, because of the targeting rules, you're almost as a defender deprogrammed for that. But if I had to pick one, it'd be Anthony Hill. But pick one in the secondary, I'll go with a young Derek Williams. I think he's young enough to still be like, nah, man, I'm about to prove something. And I think he, you know, a veteran like McCoubre, he's like, nah, I'm just trying to make the play. I ain't trying to get suspended, all right, you know, for a game or that kind of thing. I ain't trying to get disqualified. I think a young Derek Williams still might go out there and try to make a name for himself. I'll go Derek Williams.
Hey, guys, I lied a little bit because Jason Washington came up with a really good question here. I know there are many players we're anxious to see this spring, but who's your dark horse on both offense and defense you believe can shock Longhorn Nation? I want to put this one in there. I said the other one was going to be our last question, but it's this one from Jason. Who do y'all think surprised offense and defense? Surprise for me on defense is going to be Jelani McDonald. I think he's going to have a chance to play a little bit this year. Not sure how, but I don't expect him to look great from the first practice either, by the way. But I think by the time spring ball finishes, he's going to be a guy that's up there. On offense for me,
it's tough. Offense is much tougher.
I may go DeAndre Moore.
Yep.
I may go DeAndre Moore or Trey Wiser. I still love Trey Wiser as a running back, guys. So I know people are saying, oh, well, Jaden Blue this, and Jaden Blue's a really good receiver. So I'm not, but Trey Wiser may be a better runner than Jaden Blue. So that's going to be where I'm at.
Yeah, I'll go Darren Gallette on the defensive side of the ball. What can he prove as a spring ball? Bobby, you actually took both of the guys that were on the top of my brain a little bit for your two picks. But Darren Gallette, because we know coming out of high school the type of athlete he was, running the leg, the anchor of a 4x2 that ended up, you know, in the state finals, is mighty impressive at 6'3", 220. Seeing it in person was one of the most impressive feats I saw that entire recruiting cycle. Now that he's 100% healthy and in his first spring, what can he be on the field? Texas is, you know, going to have a little bit of an opportunity there at the linebacker spot. What can he do off the edge as well? Darren Gallette's my pick defensively. Offensively, again, I was going to go with somebody like DeAndre Moore. I'll actually stick at wide receiver Aaron Butler. Let's see what he can do in this spring. He was a late addition, not a lot of tape, not a lot of time in that last cycle for a lot of Texas folks to look back and say, all right, we know what we have with this guy, the way he kind of slid into class the final hour. Aaron Butler to me is a guy who you watch the tape again, you're like, how did it take so long for somebody to say, yeah, come join our class? Well, the chips fell correctly for Texas to add him late, and I think they're going to, you know, really reap the rewards of getting him in the fold and having him side the dotted line.
What about you, Rod? Yeah. Surprise on offense, defense?
Dark horse at offense. Man, offense is so stacked. Dark horse, somebody who hadn't really shown anything, basically what we're talking about yet, but they can have a breakout campaign during spring. How about a Ryan Niblett? How about, there you go. Okay. The guy known as being a speedster. I mean, he kind of fits the Sark mode of a wide receiver, but honestly, it's kind of been somebody who's been almost recruited over, you would say, and it really hadn't hurt.
To your point, dark horse, to your point, Rod, dark horse can mean he's either behind a bunch of guys, right, that are better than him, have been perceived as better than him, or he's coming out of the blue.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, yeah, he's, I don't mean recruited over in a bad way, but it just seems like a lot – they brought in some guys lately, and it seems like those guys are at least projected to get more playing time to start. He's been there a while. So I'll go there as a dark horse. Defensively, that's good. Defensively, dark horse. How about a Gavin Holmes? Does that count?
Yes, because he's buried right now. To your point,
I think we're expecting some of the youngsters to come up and start taking some of those reps at corner. You know, I guess I could go to a Jalen Gilbo, kind of in the same. I could go a Jalen Gilbo / Gavin Holmes, but Gavin Holmes has played more, so maybe I'll go Jalen Gilbo, who hadn't really played as much, and he's dealt with some injuries, and there's been buzz about him, but, you know, never really seen it materialize. So I'll go with Jalen Gilbo. I'll go there in the secondary.
Not bad at all, Rod. I like those picks a lot. All right, that's going to do it for this Sunday night live stream. Thank you to Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage broker, 512-663-4744. If you want to get in on your mortgage and get it going this week, 512-663-4744. Also, I want to say thank you to Rod Babers and CJ Vogel, as well as our producer, Matt Hutchison. And thanks to all of you for joining us. Everybody have a good week. And by the way, wear green. You guys wear green next St. Patrick's Day. Hook them, guys. Have a good week.
Hook them.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.